Chapter 30, The Evidence of a Giant Life Form.
So here they were in this horrible, horrible existence that just seemed to tumble on and on forever, never ending, never slowing down, the same years and decades of torment, regret, sorrow, pain, blanketed darkness, nights never ending, constant consciousness, lostness, aloneness, loneliness, rumblings from the pit, groans, torturing fire, choking smells, unending and unending, no letting up, no relief, no comfort, never resting, never ceasing, no end in sight. 100 years rolling into another 100 years, slowly turning over into 1,000 years, painstakingly evolving into another 1,000 years, with the same grinding pain, the continual bone-racking agony, screams upon screams, weeping upon weeping, echoing sighs upon sighs, when all of a sudden, they were out of there. It was gone. Could it be true? Yes, it was. The pain, the agony, the torture, it was all gone, and now they were standing before a huge massive white throne with tons and tons of books all around them. And there before them, people from all walks of life, both young and old alike, were lined up in these huge massive giant lines. Why, it looked as if the whole history of humanity was represented here. And that's because it was. Suddenly, the joy was replaced by fear as each person took their individual place before the throne, and suddenly the purpose of the books was realized. They contained every single dirty, rotten thing these people had ever done. No one left those books thinking they could ever enter heaven on their own. Are you kidding me? They fell horribly short. Every last one of them. They had rejected the work of the Messiah and had instead trusted in their own works. And lest there be any doubt, a book that contained all the names of those who were going to heaven, who did trust the Messiah, was opened up. And sure enough, these people's names who were standing before the throne, their names could not even be found anywhere. And so it was, these people got what they knew they justly deserved. They were now cast into the lake of fire, forever. The book is Revelation. The judgment, of course, is the great white throne judgment.
Now, folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say rejecting the work of Jesus Christ on the cross for the forgiveness of our sin, and instead trusting in your own works to get you to heaven, is truly the deadliest thing you could ever do. Amen? I mean, you talk about the ultimate rude awakening. One minute you finally get out of hell, you get one moment of peace, only to realize you're going into the lake of fire forever. People, that's really going to happen. And so here's the point. You would think that people would stand up and take notice when God warns them about this future coming judgment, right? You would think that people would rightly conclude, hey man, I better get right with God so I don't suffer the coming judgment of God, right? But unfortunately, folks, as we've been seeing, that's no longer the case. Many people in our world today are not just having a hard time believing in God, but if there's one thing they absolutely refuse to believe in, it's in a future coming judgment of God. Therefore, in order to help these scoffing people hopefully become smarter people, we're going to continue in our study, The Witness of Creation. And what we're doing is taking a look at the 5 different evidences of creation that God has left behind for us, showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal, intimate relationship with the Creator of the universe, before it's too late. And so far we've seen the first evidence showing us this amazing truth is the evidence of an intelligent creation. The second evidence was the evidence of a young creation. The third evidence was the evidence of a special creation. And the last 8 times we saw the fourth evidence was the evidence of a judged creation. And what we've been seeing is there really was a worldwide flood, i.e. a time when God judged this world because of sin, not just because the Bible says so, but as we saw last time, because the evidence of a glorious civilization says so. And what we saw there was the evidences of an advanced technology, ancient artifacts, an amazing migration, and even astounding cities still underwater that showed us that, contrary to the lie of evolution, that mankind was never ever some dumb stupid apes living in caves dragging their knuckles on the ground. Are you kidding me? What we saw there clearly was that the people of Noah's day were smart. Super smart. Much more highly advanced and technological than you and I could ever shake a stick at. Unfortunately, they scoffed at Noah and ignored the offer to get saved before it was too late. And in so doing, they were totally destroyed. But you might be thinking, okay, so it's getting pretty obvious that there really was a worldwide flood. This is why there are so many flood legends all over the world. This is why the dinosaurs and tons of other life forms suddenly perished all over the world. This is why we have sedimentary layers of Earth all over the world are filled with tons of fossils. This is why the topography of the Earth is in the shape it's in, and this is why we find evidence of a highly advanced past civilization all over the world. But wait a minute. The Bible also says there were giants in those days. You really expect me to believe that one? I mean, granted, evolution was wrong on all those other areas, but surely the Bible can't be serious about giants, could it? Well, actually it is, which brings us to the eighth evidence of a judged creation, and that is the evidence of a giant life forms. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Genesis 6:1-8. When men began to increase in number on the earth and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they married any of them they chose. Then the Lord said, "My spirit will not contend with man forever, for he is mortal, his days will be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God went to the daughters of men and had children by them. They were the heroes of old, men of renown. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. The Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. The Lord said, "I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to birds of the sky, for I am sorry that I have made them." But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord.
Now folks, according to our text, the Bible is clear. Before the world was judged by a flood from God, there was a group of people called the Nephilim. So who were they? Well, the word Nephilim literally means giant, and the phrase heroes of old literally means mighty strong ones, and the phrase men of renown means men of fame and glory. So put it all together and the Bible pictures a group of giant people who were mighty big and strong, and they were well known in Noah's day. But that's not all. Notice what else the text says. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days and what? And also afterwards. So that means there must have been giants before and after Noah's day, right? And that's precisely why the Bible talks about giants after Noah's day. Let's take a look.
Numbers 13:30-33. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people, they are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them." Deuteronomy 1:26-28. "But you were unwilling to go up, you rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. You grumbled in your tents and said, 'The Lord hates us, so he brought us out of Egypt to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us. Where can we go? Our brothers have made us lose heart. They say, the people are stronger and taller than we are, the cities are large, with walls up to the sky. We even saw the Anakites there.'" Deuteronomy 2:10-11, 20-21. "The Emites used to live there, a people strong and numerous, and as tall as the Anakites. Like the Anakites, they too were considered Rephaites, but the Moabites called them Emites. That too was considered a land of the Rephaites, who used to live there, but the Ammonites called them Zamzumites. They were a people strong and numerous, and as tall as the Anakites. The Lord destroyed them from before the Ammonites, who drove them out and settled in their place." Deuteronomy 3:10-11. "We took all the towns on the plateau, and all Gilead, and all Bashan as far as Salikar and Edrei, towns of Og's kingdom in Bashan. Only Og, king of Bashan, was left of the remnant of the Rephaites. His bed was made of iron and was more than 13 feet long and 6 feet wide. It is still in Rabbah of the Ammonites." Deuteronomy 9:2-3. "The people are strong and tall, Anakites. You know about them and have heard it said, 'Who can stand up against the Anakites?' But be assured today that the Lord your God is the one who goes across ahead of you like a devouring fire. He will destroy them, he will subdue them before you?
Now folks, it's pretty clear according to the Bible that there really was a group of giant people before and after the flood of Noah. One of them had a bed 13 feet long and 6 feet wide. How'd you like to have him on your basketball team? Wow. No wonder the Israelites said they were like the size of grasshoppers compared to these guys. And so that's the question. Do we see any evidence of actual giants before and after the flood of Noah? Of course. But don't take my word for it. Let's look at the evidence. The first evidence of giant life forms is from giant conditions. Now folks, to me the first logical question is, how in the world could people even get to be gigantic in the first place? Well, this is why it's important to note that the conditions in the pre-flood world were much different than we have today. The Bible says that people not only got really big, but they also lived a really long time.
Genesis 5:3-32. When Adam had lived 130 years, he became the father of a son in his own likeness, according to his image, and named him Seth. Then the days of Adam after he became the father of Seth were 800 years, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. Seth lived 105 years, and became the father of Enosh. Then Seth lived 807 years after he became the father of Enosh, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. Enosh lived 90 years, and became the father of Kenan. Then Enosh lived 815 years after he became the father of Kenan, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Enosh were 905 years, and he died. Kenan lived 70 years, and became the father of Mahalalel. Then Kenan lived 840 years after he became the father of Mahalalel, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Kenan were 910 years, and he died. Mahalalel lived 65 years, and became the father of Jared. Then Mahalalel lived 830 years after he became the father of Jared, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Mahalalel were 895 years, and he died. Jared lived 162 years, and became the father of Enoch. Then Jared lived 800 years after he became the father of Enoch, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. Enoch lived 65 years, and became the father of Methuselah. Then Enoch walked with God 300 years after he became the father of Methuselah, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Methuselah lived 187 years, and became the father of Lamech. Then Methuselah lived 782 years after he became the father of Lamech, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and he died. Lamech lived 182 years, and became the father of a son. Now he called his name Noah, saying, "This one will give us rest from our work and from the toil of our hands arising from the ground which the Lord has cursed." Then Lamech lived 595 years after he became the father of Noah, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. Noah was 500 years old, and Noah became the father of Shem, Ham, and Japheth.
Now folks, according to our text, prior to the flood of Noah, people not only got really big, but they also lived a long, long time, right? One guy, who must have had a horrible time learning to spell his name in kindergarten, lived 969 years. In fact, all of chapter 5 of the book of Genesis is dealing with nothing but the recording of long lifespans for the descendants of Noah and even Noah himself. So that's the question. How in the world could people get so big and live so long? Well, as we saw earlier, that's the importance of understanding the effects of the possible ice canopy that surrounded the world. If you'll recall, we saw that it would provide just the right conditions for giant people with giant ages. Let's revisit a portion of that study and then expand on it. Some have theorized that prior to the flood of Noah that there was a canopy of water or ice vapor surrounding the earth upper atmosphere based on a clue concerning the second day of creation.
Genesis 1:6-8. And God said, Let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the expanse and separated the water under the expanse from the water above it. And it was so. God called the expanse sky. And there was evening, and there was morning, the second day.
Many would say that this expanse between the waters to separate water from water is speaking of when God separated the waters that were on the earth from the waters that were in the upper atmosphere. And as we saw, it was these pre-flood atmospheric conditions that would provide just the right conditions for giant people living giant lifespans. And the first right condition, an ice canopy, would help to produce giant people living giant lifespans, is the right amount of protection. With a water vapor or ice canopy around the Earth's pre-flood atmosphere, this very well could have provided the right conditions for such amazing long lifespans, because it would have provided the right amount of protection from the harmful radiation that currently beats down upon us that causes all kinds of life-shortening effects such as cancer and mutations, just to name a few. With a layer that decreased these harmful effects from above, it is only natural that we would see an increase of long lifespans from below. Here's why. The sun emits a lot more than just light. It puts off a lot of harmful radiation in the form of various rays like ultraviolet rays, X-rays, gamma rays, etc. That means that even though you can't see it, your body is constantly being bombarded with these harmful rays of radiation. This is why when you get an X-ray at the doctor's, they not only hide out in another room, but they also try to shield the rest of your body with a lead-lined vest. It works great to see the inside of you, but prolonged exposure could mean the death of you. Our bodies put up a good resistance and daily repairs the damage, but pretty soon, our skin and bodies can't hold up anymore. They eventually start losing the battle after a few decades, and that's when we see our bodies start to break down and our skin begin to wrinkle up. However, there are some things that will block out these harmful rays. As we just saw, lead will shield you from the radiation, but so will concrete, and interesting enough, so will water. Therefore, if indeed there really was an ice or water canopy in the pre-flood atmosphere, this would have been an incredible protection from the harmful aging effects caused by the radiation emitted by the sun. This is why when the flood came and the canopy came down, so did the lifespans. If you add up the dates of the people who lived right after the flood, you will see that the lifespans dropped off from around 900 to 400, and then 200, and then 100, until today 100 is considered old, but before the flood, you were just a kid at 100. As one guy said, it was about time to start looking for a wife and a house near a grade school. And gee, if you lived longer, you'd have much more time to get bigger, wouldn't you? Go figure. And by the way, for those who think these ages aren't literal as some suggest, you might want to check your math. Some argue that these ages aren't literal because they claim that back then they counted every month as a year, and so you have to divide their age by 12. Well, that's nice to think that, but it makes no sense. For instance, as we saw, the Bible says Enoch was 65 when he begat Methuselah. So do the math, and if you divide 65 by 12, then we see that Enoch was about 5.5 years old when he became a daddy. I don't think so. These people really lived that long, and there's no need to read it otherwise. Besides, we have actual modern examples of people experiencing these kinds of anti-aging effects when shielded from the sun's harmful radiation. Studies have shown that there is a noticeable longevity of those who live in steep canyons and valleys shielded from the sun. There's also the jump in longevity in the 1911 to 1951 timeframe, greater even than the jump brought about by miracle drugs since, when automation and transportation and production moved people indoors. And there's even the example of longevity of what happened to the Dickerson children. These children lived secreted away in an attic until they were teenagers. Pictures of Connie, Gordon, and Glenda Dickerson at age 18, 15, and 13 looked like they had nearly stopped aging. They were still quite healthy and intelligent, but they still appeared like little children. Also, Dr. Jack Quozzo extensively studied Neanderthal bones and came to some startling conclusions. As we saw before, Neanderthals were not missing links of man. There is no missing link, but they were post-flood survivors of man. Here's what Dr. Quozzo discovered. Based upon cranial measurements and tooth enamel wear, he estimates the age at death of the Neanderthals being 250 to 300 years old. This makes no sense according to evolution, but according to the Bible it makes perfect sense. Being post-flood survivors, they no longer lived 900 years because the earth no longer had the ice canopy shielding them. Instead, just like the Bible records for us, the immediate post-flood survivors were on the downhill slide from 400, and then 200, and then 100, just like we have today. The second right condition, an ice canopy, would help to produce giant people living giant lifespans as the right amount of environment. With a layer of water vapor or ice surrounding the pre-flood world, we not only would have just the right amount of protection to live longer and get bigger, but you'd also have the right amount of lush environment to make this ability even more conducive. This is because an ice canopy would have created a type of global greenhouse effect that produced pleasant subtropical to temperate climate all over the world. It also would have dramatically increased the atmospheric pressure on the surface of the Earth, which would have produced an amazing, much more healthy environment. In short, people and animals and plants would not only live longer but healthier and thus become even larger. Everything, not just plants, would grow like weeds. In fact, we even see evidence of this super lush environment contained within the fossil-bearing rocks all over the world. So much so that even the evolutionists admit it.
It has long been felt that the average climate of the Earth throughout time has been milder and more homogeneous than it is today. If so, the present certainly is not a very good key to the past in terms of climate. *R.H. Doff and *R.L. Batten, Evolution of the Earth, 1971, p. 298. In those days, when the dinosaurs lived, the Earth had a tropical or subtropical climate over much of the land surface, and in the widespread tropical lands there was an abundance of lush vegetation. The land was low, and there were no high mountains forming physical or climatic barriers. *E.H. Colbert, Evolutionary Growth Rates in the Dinosaurs, in Scientific Monthly, August 1949, p. 71. Climatic conditions were then much more uniform over the Earth than now. Considerable limestone formations, of Cambrian age at high latitudes, indicate strongly that they were there deposited in relatively warm or temperate waters. *W.J. Miller, An Introduction to Historical Geology, 1952, p. 116. The general distribution and character of the rocks and their fossil content point to more uniform climatic conditions than those of today. Fossils in the Arctic rocks are not essentially different from those of low latitudes. *Opposite, p. 143. In the case of the Devonian, such evidence is indicative of a worldwide mild climate. *O.D. Von Engel and *K.E. Castor, Geology, 1952, p. 596. As for the earlier Paleozoic periods, the character and distribution of Mississippian fossils rather clearly prove absence of well-defined climatic zones like those of today. *W.J. Miller, An Introduction to Historical Geology, 1952, p. 169.
In fact, what's interesting is that even scientists who don't want to believe in an ice canopy theory have actually published articles that give credence to the theory. As one researcher pointed out, using evidence collected in South America and New Zealand, an international team of researchers has determined that in the past, climate changes occurred rapidly and were global in scale. Thomas Lowell, associate professor of geology at the University of Cincinnati, and his colleagues published their findings in the September 15, 1995, issue of Science. So, what did cause the climate changes? Lowell admits that he and his colleagues have no quick and easy answers, but possibly water vapors played a role. A lot of water vapor in the atmosphere leads to a warmer climate, he states. If there's less vapor, temperatures become colder. Amounts of water vapor can change quickly, and the geological record indicates that climate changes could be very fast. Also, as a side note, the water vapor canopy would also explain another problem evolutionists run into. That is, there appears to be too much water in Earth's upper atmosphere. NASA satellites have confirmed far more hydroxyl in the hydrosphere than current models predict. The parent molecule of hydroxyl is water. Because ultraviolet radiation from the sun breaks down water in Earth's upper atmosphere into hydroxyl and hydrogen, a large amount of water must have previously existed. Can you say ice canopy? The third right condition, an ice canopy would help to produce giant people living giant lifespans, is the right amount of oxygen. With a layer of water vapor or ice surrounding the pre-flood world, we not only would have just the right amount of protection and environment to live longer and get bigger, but you'd also have the right amount of oxygen to make it even more possible. In fact, it would also help explain a serious problem the evolutionists have with the dinosaurs. You see, even they admit that their lungs and their nostrils seem to be too small for them to breathe. For instance, an 80-foot Apatosaurus had nostrils the same size as a horse. And so that's the problem. How is an 80-foot animal going to get enough air through nostrils the same size as a horse? As one guy said, he would be sucking so hard trying to get a breath, it would set him on fire from all the friction from the wind whistling in there. So how did they breathe? Well, in our atmosphere today, an 80-foot dinosaur couldn't breathe. In a pre-flood atmosphere with an ice canopy, they could. This is because, as we just saw, they not only had an increase of air pressure in that atmosphere, but apparently they had much more oxygen in that atmosphere. It is now known, thanks to the oxygen bubbles trapped in fossilized amber, which would have been created at the time of the flood, that when they tapped into these air bubbles that there was an increase of oxygen than what we have today. So what effects would a pre-flood world that not only had an increase of air pressure but an increase of oxygen have on things? Well, as one gentleman explained, just breathing would be exciting. Adam would breathe and go, well, Eve, that was fun. Let's do that again, ready? And that's because under those conditions, not only does your hemoglobin take on oxygen, but your plasma gets oxygen saturated in your bloodstream, which means you could run for hundreds of miles without getting tired. Therefore, Adam and Eve did not need a car, they could run to grandma's. Only they did not have a grandma, or a mother-in-law by the way, which was why it was called paradise. But seriously, an increase of air pressure and increased oxygen would explain how the dinosaurs could get so big on such small lungs and nostrils. This kind of atmosphere could also explain how the pterosaur, with its stubby body and wingspan of up to 11 meters, could have stayed airborne, and it also explains why the dinosaurs that survived the flood didn't get as big. What? Dinosaurs still alive after the flood? Yep, but that's for the next section to reveal. In fact, even a Yale study published in the March 3, 2000 issue of Science independently confirms the high levels of oxygen present in the Earth's distant past. But it's obvious, this kind of pre-flood atmosphere would help people to live longer, grow bigger, and even heal faster. And we even see this reality with the modern usage of what's called hyperbaric oxygen therapies. Modern medicine is finally catching on to the positive health benefits of increased pressurized oxygen on the human body. So much so that they have even created things called hyperbaric oxygen chambers where people sit inside oxygen-saturated containers and experience various healing effects from many different kinds of ailments. Some of these include Lyme disease, strokes, migraines, multiple sclerosis, autism, diabetically derived illnesses such as diabetic foot, diabetic retinopathy, and diabetic nephropathy, abscesses, certain kinds of hearing loss, radiation-induced hemorrhagic cystitis, inflammatory bowel disease, and even leprosy, just to name a few. It also reduces infection, decreases stress, and enhances stamina. In fact, it was this same amazing technology that was used in the infamous Baby Jessica accident, as this man shares.
How many of you remember Baby Jessica several years ago? If you'll recall, she fell down in the well in Texas when she was 18 months old. Her left leg slipped down in the pipe, her right leg came up behind her, and she did the splits as she slid down 20 feet inside an 8-inch steel pipe. She was down there 2.5 days, it was an amazing rescue, and when they finally got her out, a lot of her body had turned black from lack of circulation. Her right leg was totally black, one of the doctors said they needed to cut the leg off immediately. But another doctor said before we cut her leg off, let's just try putting Jessica in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber. Now, back in 1987, this was very new therapy. This was a revolutionary idea, today it is being used more and more. They stuck Jessica in one of these chambers, filled it up full of pure oxygen, and pumped it up to double normal pressure, forcing oxygen into her system. Within a few hours, her leg turned pink, one by one her toes turned pink. They finally had to amputate half of her little toe. She would have lost her whole leg had it not been for hyperbaric therapy.
Furthermore, even celebrities and professional sports teams are getting in on the action due to the rapid healing effects it has on their injured players. Now here's the point. Can you imagine if you lived in an atmosphere that was like one big giant hyperbaric oxygen chamber? As one man states, you would not need a hospital, you would be healed up before you could get there. But it's obvious. Everything would not only heal quickly but everything would grow like crazy. Why, if I didn't know better, I'd say we really do see evidence of how the pre-flood world could have provided the right giant conditions to create giant people living giant ages. How about you? Go figure. Oh, but that's not all. The second evidence of giant life forms is from giant plants. We not only see the right kind of pre-flood conditions to create giant people living giant ages, but these conditions have been duplicated to produce a giant amount of plants. For instance, as we saw earlier, this why near Clarkia, Idaho, they've discovered an abundant supply of fossilized subtropical plants. This is why in Wyoming there are fossilized palm leaves where today one only finds sagebrush and grassland. This is why in Alaska they have found subtropical species such as the magnolia and figure. This is why in the western United States where today we only see grassland, shrub, or desert vegetation, there are many fossil beds that contain temperate, subtropical and even tropical plants. In fact, this is why large fossilized trees are found near the North and South Poles. And in Antarctica, some trees are 24 feet long and 2 feet thick. It's obvious that the whole Earth at one time was a lush tropical paradise full of tons of plants. But that's not all. These kind of pre-flood conditions not only produced a giant amount of plants, but these conditions have been duplicated to produce giant-sized plants as this man shares.
Dr. K. Mori, Kao University in Tokyo, Japan, started raising a tomato plant in his basement with no windows. Well, plants have to have light, so he took a fiber optic cable and ran it down from the roof, down to light the plants. His cherry tomato plant began to grow abnormally fast, and he thought, you know, I wonder if the fiber optic cable is blocking out the UV light and only allowing in pure light, not the other stuff that comes from sunlight. So he put a plastic shield over the plant and moved it to the laboratory. The plastic shield was like sunglasses to block out UV light. He also decided to pressurize carbon dioxide to stem of the plant. He built a flexible sock around the stem and pressurized CO2, since plants breathe CO2. He did not do the whole plant, it would have done even better, but all he did was the stem with pressurized CO2. After 2 years, his cherry tomato plant was 16 feet tall and produced 900 tomatoes, and his tomatoes on his cherry tomato plant were baseball size. They moved it to a shopping center, built a bigger plastic shield over it, built scaffolding to hold the branches up. Last I heard, the plant was 40 feet tall and produced 15,000 tomatoes every year. That is a tomato tree. Can you imagine if the whole earth was hyperbaric though before the flood? All the plants would grow like crazy.
Then another researcher decided to put another pre-flood condition to the test on plants, and here are the giant results he produced.
Dan Carlson was inspired by Genesis 2:6, but there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground to experiment with misting plants. He also incorporated the music of birds with certain oscillating frequencies that open the plant's stomata. While these pores are open, the leaves are sprayed with a plant nutrient enzyme through mist. The results were amazing. A purple passion plant, which normally grows to about 18 inches, has grown to a Guinness World Record 1,300 feet. Carlson also grows 10-inch-long potatoes and cantaloupes the size of soccer balls. His system was dubbed Sonic Bloom. The patented process was used to treat apple orchards in Wisconsin. In a state averaging 290 bushels an acre, the mist and songbird music help trees yield over 500 bushels an acre, and the fruit has a shelf life of 5 months instead of the normal 30 days. Cucumbers, soybeans, cabbages, tomatoes, cauliflower, and even redwood trees have been greatly impacted by this revolutionary agricultural system. Still others use this formula on a pumpkin. The result was a 1,458-pound pumpkin that was the world's record as of its weighing.
And folks, it's precisely these kind of tests that duplicate the pre-flood conditions that show us how we can not only produce giant plants today, but it also shows us why we discover giant plants of yesterday. This is why they find trees in the fossil record that today only grow a few feet, but back then apparently grew 100 feet. This is why one Arctic explorer found remains of a saber-toothed tiger and a 90-foot plum tree with green leaves and ripe fruit on its branches over 600 miles north of the Arctic Circle in the New Siberian Islands. Today the only vegetation that grows there is a 1-inch-high willow. Fossil ferns have been discovered the size of trees, and horsetails once shot up over 30 feet tall. Fossilized cattails have been found that are 60 feet tall. And they even found a tree stump in Texas that measured 40 feet in diameter, which means the tree at one time must have been 1,000 feet tall. Now that's a giant plant. And that's exactly what you'd expect if there really was a pre-flood world with the right giant conditions to produce giant life forms, just like the Bible says. The third evidence of giant life forms is from giant people. We not only see the right kind of pre-flood conditions to create giant plants, but just like the Bible says, this would also have the right kind of conditions to produce giant people. In fact, researchers have recently taken the duplication of the pre-flood atmosphere a step further. They have not only used them on plants, but they've even used them on various animals, and not so surprisingly, they were able to produce giant-aged and giant-sized specimens. One such example is the research done by Dr. Carl Baugh. He created a unique chamber that acts like a hyperbaric biosphere that simulates these pre-flood conditions on Earth. It provides an increase of atmospheric pressure, enhanced oxygen and protection from ultraviolet radiation, while the magnetic coils attempt to make up for Earth's reduced magnetic field. Tests indicated that this type of environment did indeed produce increased longevity, cellular growth, and a change in molecular structures. Here are just a few of the results of his experiments. The lives of the fruit flies he put in there have tripled. The size of his piranha have doubled, and they are not only able to produce gigantism, but they can produce it at an accelerated rate. In fact, some of his experiments with this pre-flood biosphere seem to have reversed some of the negative degenerative effects from the curse upon creation. For instance, in his experiments with poisonous snakes, he found that after just 4 weeks in the hyperbaric chamber, that it actually changed the molecular structure of the venom of a copperhead snake into a non-toxic state. In fact, so promising are these results that NASA has even requested Drive, Baugh's research and discoveries to see if they can utilize them in the space program. And speaking of NASA, one person shared how another experiment done by NASA involved three scientists living on the floor of the ocean for about 1 to 3 months in a biosphere. When they left, they were all middle-aged with graying hair and low libidos. When they returned, their hair was clear of gray, their wrinkles had started to disappear, and their sex drive was so increased that their wives complained to NASA about it. It turns out that certain glands and organs were reactivated. One in particular was the gland that lies over the top of the heart. Blood tests showed unusual hormones. Hormones that are normally associated with the growth of young children. Then he further speculates, what if we take this knowledge and build a room that emulates the atmosphere of the Earth before the flood and sleep in it for 8 hours a day? What effects might it have? My friend from the NSA said that for every day spent in there, 1 year was added onto your life until you maxed out at 1,000. And folks, it's precisely these kind of tests that duplicate the pre-flood conditions that show us how we can not only produce giant-aged and giant-sized animals today, but just like the Bible says, it also shows us why we discovered giant people living in the past. First of all, many people scoff at the biblical account of Noah's flood and say, if there were millions of people on the earth at the time of the flood as creationists have suggested, then why don't we find millions of human fossils? Actually, that's a great question, but when one looks at the facts concerning the effects of a worldwide flood, finding tons of human remains is not logical, as this article shares.
Scripture, backed up by so much other evidence, is very clear that there was a global flood, and the pre-flood people were destroyed. So there must obviously be an explanation for this lack of human fossils. There are some claims and reports of human artifacts and remains in rock layers that are clearly part of the flood sediments. However, let's begin by considering the nature of the fossil record. Most people don't realize that in terms of numbers of fossils, 95% of the fossil record consists of shallow marine organisms such as corals and shellfish. Within the remaining 5%, 95% are all the algae and plant or tree fossils, including the vegetation that now makes up the trillions of tons of coal, and all the other invertebrate fossils, including the insects. Thus, the vertebrates, fish, amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals, together make up very little of the fossil record, in fact, 5% of 5%, which is a mere 0.25% of the entire fossil record. So comparatively speaking, there are very, very few amphibian, reptile, bird and mammal fossils, yet so much is often made of them. For example, the number of dinosaur skeletons in all the world's museums, both public and university, totals only about 2,100. Furthermore, of this 0.25% of the fossil record, which is vertebrates, only 1% of that 0.25%, or 0.0025%, are vertebrate fossils that consist of more than a single bone. For example, there's only one stegosaurus skull that has been found, and many of the horse species are each represented by only one specimen of one tooth. However, this same observation can be more reasonably explained by flood geologists, as due to the order of burial of the different ecological zones of organisms by the flood waters. For example, shallow marine organisms, ecological zones, would be the first destroyed by the fountains of the Great Deep breaking open, with the erosional runoff from the land due to the torrential rainfall concurrently burying them. On this basis, then we would probably not expect to find human remains in the early flood strata, which would contain only shallow marine organisms. The fossil record, as we understand it at the moment, certainly fits with this. Consequently, it's not only human fossils that are not found in abundance in the flood sediments, but there is a relative lack of other mammal fossils also. Also, the turbulence of the water, even in a local flood, can be horrific, particularly when the fast-moving current picks up not only sand and mud, but large boulders. Under such conditions, human bodies would probably be thrown around like flotsam, and would tend to be destroyed by the agitation and abrasion. Then the differential suspension in the waters could have made it hard to bury those bodies that survived the turbulence. This is because human bodies, when immersed in water, tend to bloat, and therefore become lighter and float to the surface. This is what is meant by differential suspension. The human bodies floating on the water surface could therefore for some time be carrion for whatever birds were still flying around seeking places to land and food to eat. Likewise, marine carnivores still alive in their watery habitat would also devour corpses. Furthermore, if the bodies floated long enough and were not eaten as carrion, then they would still have tended to either decompose or be battered to destruction on and in the waters before any burial could take place. Thus, even if a handful, perhaps a few thousand, were preserved, when such a small number is distributed through the vast volume of flood sediments, the chances of one being found at the surface are mathematically very, very low, let alone of being found by a professional scientist who could recognize its significance and document it properly. Finally, we need to recall God's purpose for the flood. In Genesis 6:7, we read that God said he would destroy man, whom he had created from the face of the earth. So perhaps God deliberately made sure that the flood waters did just that. Elsewhere in Scripture, we learn that as far as God's judgment of sin is concerned, when God says that he wants the offenders removed, then this means utter destruction.
So as you can clearly see, once you look at the facts concerning the effects of a worldwide flood, finding tons of human remains is not logical. However, be that as it may, we still do find some, and those that we find, for some reason are very big. Go figure. Let's take a look. The first evidence we find showing us there really were giant people is from giant prints.
In 1884, Earl Flint, a geologist representing the Peabody Museum and Harvard University, discovered in a rock quarry near Managua, Nicaragua, on the shores of Lake Gilva, a layer containing fossilized human tracks, 16 to 24 feet below the surface. The longest one uncovered was 17 inches. 2 years earlier, in the summer of 1882, inmates working in the quarry at the state prison near Carson City, Nevada, brought to light a layer of sandstone covered with fossilized animal tracks, among them a number having belonged to the extinct mammoth. What caused considerable scientific consternation, however, was the fact that several human tracks were also found. The tracks were in six series, each with alternate right and left tracks. The stride was from 2.5 to over 3 feet, and the individual prints were from 18 to 20 inches in length, that of a giant. The Carson City tracks, in fact, showed signs that their maker had worn some type of sandal or foot protection, very definitely not the habit of an animal. Foot and shoe prints were brought to light in the 1970s, in the Carrizo Valley in northwest Oklahoma. The prints occur in both the Morrison Formation and Dakota Sandstone, supposedly over 100 million years old. The barefoot marks are somewhat eroded, but show evidence of definite pressure ridges. Several are in very close proximity to dinosaur tracks. The shoe prints are more clearly defined and reveal their wearers to have been above normal size, with the imprints averaging 20 inches long and 8 inches across the ball of the foot. Probably the most publicized man tracks are those found along the Palaxy River, near Glen Rose, Texas. They were first observed in 1908, after a flood washed away a portion of shore ledging, exposing geologic levels of the Glen Rose Formation, the Palaxy Formation, and the Twin Mountain Formation of the Trinity Group, all dated to the early Cretaceous, supposedly between 120 and 130 million years. The sum total of finds along the Palaxy reveal quite a mixture of man and animal types having lived all at the same time. There are heavy brontosaur tracks, the talon marks of the feared Tyrannosaurus rex, three-toed spores of other dinosaurs, and the imprint of a saber-toothed tiger, which was supposed to have lived only a few million years ago, not in the era of the giant lizards. As for the human prints, many are found in series, popping out of the Palaxy banks in a very natural stride, then wading into the riverbed. A good number of the prints are bare, with the large toe in particular clearly distinguishable. Others show signs of the maker's feet having worn some form of foot covering, like a moccasin or thin sandal. In one instance, in fact, the fossil print is so well preserved that the impression of the lacing on the moccasin is still visible. Some of the human tracks were as big as 21.5 inches and had a 7-foot stride, giants in the true sense of the word. Someone with a foot 21.5 inches long would have been about 11.8 feet tall. The most remarkable fact of all, however, is that these prints are in the same layer as dinosaur tracks, and in a few instances, the human and dinosaur prints cross each other, showing that the two had been contemporary when the rock had been mud. The significance of these examples was noted by Dr. A. Wilder Smith of the University of Illinois. One authentic man track found in the same stratum as one authentic brontosaurus track throws out 100 years of evolutionary teachings. It is sufficient to bring the whole Darwinistic theory down and revolutionize all biology today. In 1932 near Alamodo, New Mexico, 13 giant tracks were found by Ellis Wright, each about 22 inches long. Some later tracks were accompanied by marks suggestive of the use of some sort of support like a walking stick by one of the antediluvian beings. Blue Mountain in the Megalong Valley in the Blue Mountains NSW. A depression found in ironstone protruding from a creek bank was the deeply impressed print of a large human-like foot. This footprint measures 7 inches across the toes. Had the footprint been complete, it would have been at least 2 feet in length, appropriate to a 12-foot human. McClee River Noel Reeves found near Kempsey, NSW monstrous footprints were discovered in sandstone beds on the upper McClee River. One print shows toe 4 inches long, and the total toe span is 10 inches, suggesting that the owner of the print may have been 17 feet tall.
The second evidence we find showing us there really were giant people is from giant people. Not only do we find giants' prints left behind by giant people, but we even find giant skeletons left behind by giant people. Let's take a look at some of them. The first evidence of giant people is from their giant skeletons.
A skeleton found in a coal mine in Italy was 11 feet 6 inches tall. A 9-foot 8-inch skeleton was found in Indiana, back in 1879. One report says that the Turkish government claims they have found the grave of Noah. The skeleton was over 12 feet tall, that would make his cubit a little bigger, would it not? How big was that ark anyway? In July 1877, 4 prospectors were looking for gold and silver outcroppings in a desolate, hilly area near the head of Spring Valley, not far from Eureka, Nevada.
Scanning the rocks, one of the men spotted something peculiar projecting from a high ledge.
Climbing up to get a better look, the prospector was surprised to find a human leg bone and kneecap sticking out of solid rock. He called to his companions, and together they dislodged the oddity with picks.
Realizing they had a most unusual find, the men brought it into Eureka, where it was placed on display.
The stone in which the bones were embedded was a hard, dark red quartzite, and the bones themselves were almost black with carbonization, indicative of great age. When the surrounding stone was carefully chipped away, the specimen was found to be composed of a leg bone broken off 4 inches above the knee, the kneecap and joint, the lower leg bones, and the complete bones of the foot.
Several medical doctors examined the remains, and were convinced that anatomically they had indeed once belonged to a human being, and a very modern-looking one. But an intriguing aspect of the bones was their size. From knee to heel they measured 39 inches. Their owner in life had thus stood over 12 feet tall.
Compounding the mystery further was the fact that the rock in which the bones were found was dated geologically to the era of the dinosaurs, the Jurassic, over 185 million years old. Gigantopithecus and Meganthropus are names given to giant hominids found by paleontologists, but since they don't fit too well in the imaginary evolutionary chain, they don't get much attention. Meganthropus is the giant Java man who inhabited Southeast Asia over a million years ago.
He stood 12 feet tall and weighed several hundred pounds.
Java man was found with stone implements consisting of hand axes, clubs, pounders, adzes, knives, and other tools often ranging in weight from 8 to 36 pounds or more. Artifacts, identical to those used by Meganthropus, have been found in Australia. Gigantopithecus is often suspected of being the elusive Bigfoot or Yeti. In the late 1950s, during road construction in the Euphrates Valley of southeast Turkey, many tombs containing the remains of giants were uncovered. At the sites, the leg bones were measured to be 47.24 inches. Joe Taylor, director of Mount Blanco Fossil Museum, was commissioned to sculpt the human femur.
This antediluvian giant stood some 14 to 16 feet tall.
A 19:6 human skeleton found in 1577 AD,
under an overturned oak tree in the canton of Lucerne.
23-foot-tall skeleton found in 1456 AD beside a river in Valence, France.
A 25-6 skeleton found in 1613 AD near the castle of Chaumont in France. This was claimed to be a nearly complete find.
A 9-8 skeleton was excavated from a mound near Brewersville, Indiana, Indianapolis News, November 10, 1975. In 1833, soldiers digging at a pit for a powder magazine in Lompoc Rancho, California, discovered a male skeleton 12 feet tall. The skeleton was surrounded by carved shells, stone axes, and blocks of porphyry covered with unintelligible symbols.
The skeleton had double rows of upper and lower teeth.
These bones substantiated legends by the local Paiute Indians regarding giants which they called sea takers. In Clearwater, Minnesota, the skeletons of seven giants were found in mounds.
These had receding foreheads and complete double dentition. In 1856, a miner fell through a hole in a mine in Italy and found an 11-6 skeleton.
A mound near Toledo, Ohio, held 20 skeletons, seated and facing east with jaws and teeth twice as large as those of present-day people, and besides each was a large bowl with curiously wrought hieroglyphic figures.
Chicago Record, October 24, 1895, cited by Ron G. Dobbins, Nera Journal, V13, Fall 1978.
Ivan T. Sanderson, a well-known zoologist and frequent guest on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show in the 1960s, usually with an exotic animal with a pangolin or a lemur, once related a curious story about a letter he received regarding an engineer who was stationed on the Aleutian island of Shemya during World War II. While building an airstrip, his crew bulldozed a group of hills and discovered under several sedimentary layers what appeared to be human remains. The Alaskan mound was in fact a graveyard of gigantic human remains, consisting of crania and long leg bones. The crania measured from 22 to 24 inches from base to crown. Since an adult skull normally measures about 8 inches from back to front, such a large crania would imply an immense size for a normally proportioned human. In 1883 in Marion County, Ohio, a citizen estimates that there were about as many human skeletons in the knolls of Marion County as there are white inhabitants at present. She said also that three skeletons were found at the mouth of the Paw Paw Creek many years later, while Nimrod, Satterfield was justice of the peace. Jim Dean and some men were digging for a bridge foundation and found these at the lower end of the old Buffalo Wallow. She thought it was Dr. Kidwell, of Fairmont, who examined them and said they were very old, perhaps thousands of years old. She said that when the skeletons were exposed to the weather for a few days, their bones turned black and began to crumble, that Squire Satterfield had them buried in the Jolliffe Graveyard, Rivesville.
All these skeletons, she said, were measured and found to be about 8 feet long.
In 1878 in Ashtabula, Ohio, while a person was cultivating the soil in the vicinity, implements have been found, and in excavating the ground for graves it is said that bones have been exhumed which seem to have belonged to a race of giants. This land at one time belonged to a Mr. Pegleg Sweet, who was a man of large size and full features, and it is narrated at one time he, in digging, came upon a skull and jaw which were of such size that the skull would cover his head and the jaw could be easily slipped over his face, as though the head of a giant were enveloping his. The graves were distinguished by slight depressions in the surface of the earth, disposed in straight rows, which, with intervening spaces or valleys, covered the entire area. the number of these graves has been estimated at being between 2 and 3,000. In Muskingum County, Ohio's Brush Creek Township, in a document dated March 3, 1880, a mound located on the farm of J.M. Borman was measured 64 feet in width, 90 feet in length, and 11 feet, 3 inches in height.
It was flat on top, an unusual condition for a mound.
The mound achieved its odd shape possibly because of the stone altar, owning similar dimensions, found within. The structure was located on the summit of a hill, 152 feet above the Brush Creek. In it were discovered the bones of men and women, buried in couples, the length of their skeletons exceeding 8 and even 9 feet. The excavation was started in early December, 1870.
There was another dig included as well.
This reflected an attitude toward the then existing archaeologists, whom these people apparently held in low regard. 1792 New York, Buffalo, Turner's History of the Holland Purchase reports that 7- and 8-foot skeletons were found at an earthen fort in Orleans County with broad flat-topped skulls.
1800 Ohio, Conneaut, among the normal-size skeletons found in the remains of mounds were found gigantic bones.
Some of the skulls and jaws were large enough to fit over the head and face of a normal man. 1821 Tennessee, White County, an ancient fortification contained skeletons of gigantic stature averaging at least 7 feet in length. 1825 Ohio Valley, David Cusick, a Tuscarora by birth, wrote that among the legends of the ancient people of the stock, there was a powerful tribe called Ronongwetawanka.
They were giants, and had a considerable habitation. When the Great Spirit made the people, some of them became giants.
After a time, and having endured the outrages of these giants, it is said that the people banded together, and through the final force of about 800 warriors, successfully annihilated the abhorrent Ronongwetawanka.
After that, it was said that there were no giants anywhere.
This was supposed to have happened around 2,500 winters before Columbus discovered America, around 1000 BC.
1829 Ohio, Chesterville, in digging away a mound where a hotel was to be built, a large human skeleton was found, but no measurements were made.
It is related that the jawbone was found to fit easily over that of a citizen of the village. The local physicians examined the cranium and found it proportionately large, with more teeth than the white race of today.
The skeleton was taken to Mansfield, and has been lost sight of entirely.
1833 California, Lompoc Rancho, soldiers digging at Lompoc Rancho, California, discovered a male skeleton 12 feet tall.
Carved shells, stone axes, and other artifacts surrounded the skeleton. The skeleton had double rows of upper and lower teeth. Unfortunately, this body was secretly buried when local Indians became upset about the remains.
1835 Illinois, Lake County, in the numerous mounds in the county, skeletons ranging between 7 and 8 feet are discovered. 1849 New York, from illustrations of the ancient monuments of western New York comes the report that an elliptical mound above near the Conowango Valley held 8 big skeletons.
A thigh bone was found to be 28 long.
Exquisite stone points, enamelwork, and jewelry were found. Also discovered in the area were a number of other large skeletons, one almost 9 feet in height. 1850 New York, from the History of Allegheny County in 1879, a report that very large human bones were uncovered during excavation for the railroad. 1851 New York, a skull rib bone and shin bone were found that indicated the height to be over 8 feet tall. 1856 West Virginia, Wheeling, a human skeleton was discovered by laborers while plowing a vineyard measuring almost 11 feet tall. 1870 Ohio, in Brush Creek Township, a large mound contained skeletal remains of several humans up to 9 feet tall. A large stone tablet with unknown inscriptions similar to Greek writing was also found. 1872 Ohio, Seneca Township, when the Bates Mound was opened, the remains of 3 skeletons, whose size would indicate they measured in life, at least, 8 feet in height, were found. A remarkable feature of these remains was they had double teeth in front as well as in back of mouth and in both upper and lower jaws. 1875 West Virginia, Rivesville, workmen constructing a bridge near the mouth of Paw Paw Creek uncovered 3 giant skeletons with strands of reddish hair clinging to the skulls.
The skeletons had supported people approximately 8 feet tall.
1879 Indiana, Brewersville, a skeleton almost 10 feet tall was excavated from a mound. 1886 Pennsylvania, Ellisburg, an 8 feet skeleton was discovered.
1888 Ohio, Toledo, 20 skeletons were discovered with jaws and teeth twice as large as those of normal humans. 1888 Minnesota, St. Paul, the remains of 7 skeletons 7 to 8 feet tall were discovered.
1891 Arizona, Crittenden, a giant was unearthed and a huge stone coffin that had evidently once held the body of a man 12 feet tall.
A carving on the granite case indicated that he had 6 toes.
1895 Ohio, Toledo, a mound held 20 skeletons, seated and facing east twice as large as those of present-day people. 1923 Arizona, Grand Canyon, the bodies of 2 petrified human beings 15 and 18 feet in height were discovered. 1931 Nevada, Lovelock, large skeletons were found in the Humboldt Lake bed. One measured 8.5 feet tall and appeared to have been wrapped in a gum-covered fabric similar to Egyptian mummies.
Another skeleton was almost 10 feet long.
1932 New Mexico, White Sands, supervisor of the Lincoln National Park, Ellis Wright, found human tracks in the gypsum rock 22 inches long and from 8 to 10 inches wide.
The prints were human in origin due to the outline of the perfect prints coupled with a readily apparent instep.
1947 California, Death Valley, the skeletons of 9-foot-tall humans were found. At Gympie, Queensland, a large fragment of the back portion of a jaw which still possessed the hollow for a missing lower back molar tooth was discovered.
The owner of the tooth would have stood at 10 feet tall.
A petrified giant from the San Francisco Examiner, the body of a petrified giant has been found by 2 farmers who were sinking a well 10 miles from town.
The appearance closely resembles that of a human being.
According to the article, it appeared that the man had been scalped, presumably prior to the petrification.
The material of the body was reported to have been as hard as flint, and the body itself was complete save for the arms and legs which had broken off. The article also states that the veins and the ribs are very plainly visible. Reportedly, a group of men, perhaps out of respect for the dead, were dispatched to retrieve the arms and legs, which were still in the hole where the giant, who was approximately 12 feet tall, had been found.
New York Times, July 12, 1925, an American engineer, driven to shelter in a storm in the mountains of western Chihuahua, found at hand a cavern and in its dimness, made out great bales wrapped in leather.
He opened one and in the flicker of a torch discovered the skeleton of a man 12 feet tall.
All around him there were others, skeletons of men so big that even in a sitting posture they rose 6 feet, like columns, and in the clay of the cavern floor was a footprint 18 inches long. The engineer who made the discovery was identified simply as Nesbitt, and the 1925 article went on to suggest that plans were afoot to move the remains to a local museum for study. A follow-up article further details that there were 8 skeletons between 10 and 12 feet in height and that a local museum was mounting an expedition to visit the site and return with artifacts. The area had a history of stories about giant former inhabitants. New York Times, May 14, 1926, Tepeque, Mexico. Discovery of the bones of a race of giants who towered more than 10 feet in height was reported here today by Captain D.W. Page, an American, and Captain F.W. de Valda, an Englishman who returned from an unsuccessful search for legendary Spanish gold mines. The two men said they made their discovery in the Great Burial Mounds in mountains southwest of here. New York Times, February 11, 1902, owing to the discovery of a race of giants in Guadalupe, New Mexico, antiquarians and archaeologists are preparing an expedition to further explore that region. The giant skeletons were reported to have been found near Mesa Rico, an area 200 miles southwest of Las Vegas, Nevada. Luciana Quintana, on whose ranch the ancient burial plot is located, discovered 2 stones that bore curious inscriptions, and beneath these were found in shallow excavations the bones of a frame that could not be less than 12 feet in length. The men who opened the grave said that the forearm was 4 feet long and that in a well-preserved jaw, the teeth ranged in size from that of a hickory nut to that of the largest walnut in size.
The chest of the being is reported to have a circumference of 7 feet.
New York Times, November 1856, a day or two since, workmen engaged in subsoiling the grounds of Sheriff Wickham at his vineyard in East Wheeling, came across a human skeleton.
The impression made by the skeleton in the earth and the skeleton itself were measured by the sheriff and a brother of the craft locale, both of whom were ready to swear that it was 10 feet 9 inches in length. Its bones and teeth were almost as large as those of a horse.
An article from Strand Magazine, December 1895, mentions a fossilized giant discovered during mining operations in County Antrim, Ireland. Preeminent among the most extraordinary articles ever held by a railway company is the fossilized Irish giant, which is at this moment lying at the London and Northwestern Railway Company's Broad Street Goods Depot, and a photograph of which is reproduced here. This monstrous figure is reputed to have been dug up by a Mr. Dyer whilst prospecting for iron ore in County Antrim. The principal measurements are: entire length, 12 feet 2 inches, girth of chest, 6 feet 6 inches, and length of arms, 4 feet 6 inches. There are 6 toes on the right foot. Dyer, after showing the giant in Dublin, came to England with his queer find and exhibited it in Liverpool and Manchester at sixpence a head, attracting scientific men as well as gaping sightseers. Hazleton, Pennsylvania Sentinel, August 1881. About 3 miles from Ashley, a Mr. Macaulay has the contract from the Wilkes-Barre Coal and Iron Company for sinking a coal shaft. It is 20 feet square and is intended to have 2 tracks for carriages to run in hoisting up the coal, and is said to be the largest opening of the kind in the coal regions. It is located near the base of the mountain and has reached a depth of 475 feet. Saturday last, when the gang, or what is known as the second shift of men, were about retiring, after firing off a course of holes, Tom Cassidy, the foreman, descended the shaft to ascertain the result of the explosion, and was astonished to find an immense cavity in one of the sides of the shaft. The explosion appeared to have a terrible effect and caused more damage than benefit on one side, but his astonishment was still greater increased on clearing away some of the refuse of the rock blown by the shots to discover a solid mass of rock in which appears a clearly defined human shape of giant proportions. All the limbs, muscles and ligaments are apparent. The rock is about 16 feet in length, 18 in breadth, and about 8 in thickness. The dimensions of the human frame are giant, measuring 12 feet in length and 4 feet across the chest. Across the breast is the impression of a huge shield, about 4 feet in circumference, while the right hand clutches the broken and butt end of a large cutlass or sword. The rock was taken out whole and is now in possession of Mr. Macaulay and Ashley. Scientific American 1880, the Reverend Stephen Bowers notes, in the Kansas City Review of Science, the opening of an interesting mound in Brush Creek Township, Ohio. The mound was opened by the Historical Society of the Township, under the immediate supervision of Dr. J. F. Everhart, of Zanesville. It measured 64 by 35 feet at the summit, gradually sloping in every direction and was 8 feet in height. There was found in it a sort of clay coffin including the skeleton of a woman measuring 8 feet in length. Within this coffin was found also the skeleton of a child about 3.5 feet in length, and an image that crumbled when exposed to the atmosphere. In another grave was found the skeleton of a man and a woman, the former measuring 9 and the latter 8 feet in length. In a third grave occurred 2 other skeletons, male and female, measuring respectively 9 feet 4 inches and 8 feet. 7 other skeletons were found in the mound, the smallest of which measured 8 feet, while others reached the enormous length of 10 feet. They were buried singly, or each in separate graves. Resting against one of the coffins was an engraved stone tablet, now in Cincinnati, from the characters on which Dr. Everhart and Mr. Bowers are led to conclude that this giant race were sun worshippers. Giant footprints found at Kerala Manor, India, a hilly village in Kerala's Palakkad district, are now being projected by anthropologists as belonging to Homo sapiens. According to the team of anthropologists headed by Krishna Swami, the footprints, which are 2 feet 6 inches in length, belong to a giant human being weighing about 880 pounds and having a height of about 17 feet. There are footprints on the rock, both small and big. All these footprints are in the shape of human feet, but bigger in size, said Chandran, an awed local resident. Krishna Swami says the height of the cave in which the giant creature lived was 50 meters, and the creature must have used it to harbor animals that it killed for survival.
And not so surprisingly, the clear evidence of a giant people seems to be kept hidden from us as much as possible, as these researchers share.
Outside the scientific theater, there are a number of skeletons, skulls, and footprints of giants as tall as 30 feet. They appear in almost every culture's folklore and legend, most of them the big bully variety, and a hero dispatches almost all.
Theories about the builders of pyramids, stone circles, and other monolithic examples of ancient construction find giants as a possible answer. Big blocks mean big builders.
Even more mysterious is the seemingly unanimous decisions by the keepers of the world's museums and archaeological treasures to keep the physical evidence of giants hidden from public view. Only a smattering of the evidence is available in obscure locations. Thousands of skeletons and hundreds of historical reports are ignored. The accepted knowledge among the world's peoples is that giants are the creatures of myth and folklore, relegated to children's fairy tales and B-grade horror movies. The reality is that giants were present throughout our history, from ancient biblical accounts and historical Roman military campaigns to the relatively modern genocide of the natives of North America. Perhaps not equal in quality, but certainly rivaling in quantity, are the archives of the Smithsonian Institution. And in those archives, open only to government officials, lie the bones of many thousands of corpses dug up, described and stored without study, many for over a century and a half. Scores, if not hundreds, of these skeletons are considered giants, and yet, they lie deteriorating, not finding the slightest interest from anthropologists. Wanting no part in rocking the neatly defined, religiously correct American prehistory model, the researchers ignore them now, and there is no sign this will ever change. Hidden in dark, inaccessible storage is a sad example of scientific domination over social understanding and cultural history.
Not to be found in the history books, the science references, or the classroom is undeniable evidence that a race of giants had a prominent presence.
Oh, but that's not all. The second evidence of giant people is from their giant histories. Folks, we not only find evidence of giants by their skeletal remains, but we also find evidence of giants in their historical remains. Here are just a few instances of giants recorded throughout history.
The body of Orestes, according to the Greeks, was 11.5 feet long. Pliny describes Gabarus, who was brought to Rome by Claudius Caesar from Arabia, and was between 9 and 10 feet in height, and adds that the remains of Posio and Secundilla, found in the reign of Augustus Caesar in the Sallustian Gardens, of which they were supposed to be the guardians, measured 10 feet 3 inches each. In common with Augustine, Pliny believed that the stature of man has degenerated. Josephus tells of Eleazar, a Jew, among the hostages sent by the king of Persia to Rome, who was nearly 11 feet high. Saxo, the grammarian, mentions a giant 13.5 feet high. Ferragus, the monster supposed to have been slain by Roland, the nephew of Charlemagne, was said to have been nearly 11 feet high. It was said that there was a giant living in the 12th century under the rule of King Eugene II of Scotland, who was 11.5 feet high. There are fabulous stories told of the Emperor Maximilian. Some accounts say that he was between 8.5 and 9 feet high, and used his wife's bracelet for a finger ring, and that he ate 40 pounds of flesh a day, and drank 6 gallons of wine. He was also accredited with being a great runner, and in his earlier days was said to have conquered single-handed 8 soldiers. Becanus, physician to Charles V, says that he saw a youth 9 feet high and a man and a woman almost 10 feet. Ainsworth says that in 1553 the Tower of London was guarded by 3 brothers claiming direct descent from Henry VIII, and surnamed Og, Gog, and Magog, all of whom were over 8 feet in height. In his Chronicles of Holland in 1557, Hadrianus Ballandus said that in the time of John, Earl of Holland, the giant Nicholas was so large that men could stand under his arms, and his shoe held 3 ordinary feet. Plato speaks of a girl in Basel, Switzerland, 5 years old, whose body was as large as that of a full-grown woman, and who weighed when a year old as much as a bushel of wheat. He also mentions a man living in 1613, 9 feet high, whose hand was 1 foot 6 inches long. Fraser speaks of Chilean giants 9 feet tall. Marula says that in 1538 he saw in France a Flemish man over 9 feet. Kiesler mentions seeing Hans Brau in Tyrol in 1550, and says that he was nearly 12 feet high. Johnston mentions a lad in Holland, who was 8 feet tall. Passimot mentions a giant of 8 feet. Wierski, a Polander, presented to Maximilian II, was 8 feet high. John Middleton, born in 1752 at Hale, Lancashire, humorously called the Child of Hale, and whose portrait is in Brasenose College, Oxford, measured 9 feet 3 inches tall. In his History of Ripton, in Devonshire, 1854, Bixby gives an account of a discovery in 1687 of a skeleton 9 feet long. In 1712, in a village in Holland, there died a fisherman named Gerrit Bastiaansen, who was 8 feet high and weighed 500 pounds. The Annual Register records the death of Peter Tutchen at Posen on June 18, 1825, of dropsy of the chest. He was 29 years old and 8 feet 7 inches in height. He began to grow at the age of 7. This monster had no beard, his voice was soft, he was a moderate eater. There was a giant exhibited in St. Petersburg, June, 1829, 8 feet 8 inches in height, who was very thin and emaciated. Dr. Adam Clark, who died in 1832, measured a man 8 feet 6 inches tall. Early in 1837, there was exhibited at Parma a young man formerly in the service of the King of the Netherlands, who was 8 feet 10 inches high and weighed 401 pounds. O'Brien O'Byrne, the Irish giant, was supposed to be 8 feet 4 inches in height at the time of his death in 1783 at the age of 22. Patrick Cotter, the successor of O'Brien, and who for a while exhibited under this name, claiming that he was a lineal descendant of the famous Irish king, Brian Boru, who he declared was 9 feet in height, was born in 1761 and died in 1806 at the age of 45. His shoe was 17 inches long, and he was 8 feet 4 inches tall at his death. In the Museum of Madame Tussaud in London, there is a wax figure of Lauchkin, said to be the tallest man of his time. It measures 8 feet 5 inches and is dressed in the military uniform of a drum major of the Imperial Preobrajensky Regiment of Guards. To magnify his height, there is a figure of the celebrated dwarf, General Tom Thumb, in the palm of his hand.
Why, if I didn't know better, I'd say we really do see evidence of how the pre-flood world could have provided the right giant conditions to create giant people living giant ages. How about you? In fact, I'd also say the Bible had it right again when it said there were not only giants before the flood but ever after the flood. Go figure. The fourth evidence of giant life forms is from giant creatures. Folks, we not only see the right kind of pre-flood conditions to create giant plants and people living giant ages, but just like you'd expect, we even see evidence of all kinds of giant creatures. By the way, evolutionists will call these creatures we are about to see as being prehistoric, but in reality, there really is no such thing, as this man points out.
Prehistoric is a new word. People say, well, that is a prehistoric animal. There is no such thing as prehistoric. Did you know that word prehistoric was just added to the dictionary 100 years ago? Here is a dictionary from 1766. Guess what? Prehistoric is not in there. Dictionary from 1860. Guess what? No prehistoric. It was added about 1870. There is no such thing as prehistoric.
There is such a thing, as we are about to see, as a pre-flood creature, but there is no such thing as a prehistoric one. That's just another example of elusive language from evolution. So let's go ahead and take a look at these giant pre-flood creatures. The first evidence of these giant pre-flood creatures is from giant insects.
Dragonflies today have about a 4 to 5 inch wingspan, but we find pre-flood dragonflies that have a 5 foot wingspan. How would you like to hit thing driving down the road? Beetles once grew to be the size of a baseball mitt. They find fossilized cockroaches that are 1.5 to nearly 2 feet long. They find fossilized crickets and grasshoppers 2 feet long. And of course, monstrous spiders thrived all over the place. A fossil of a giant tarantula spider, about 18 inches long, has been discovered.
And as one gentleman thankfully points out, by the way, insects have to breathe through their skin, so increased air pressure is the only way they could breathe. Before the flood, they had greater air pressure so they could grow bigger. Today, those big ones could not survive, praise the Lord. And they even find fossilized centipedes that are 8 feet long. As one scientist said, if you took a time machine back, you'd definitely want to check your sleeping bag for these suckers before getting in. And then he said something completely amazing, they just couldn't survive at that size in modern air. For an insect to get that big, you'd need to have a lot more oxygen in the air. Well, hey, go figure. That's exactly what we see in the pre-flood world! 6. The second evidence of these giant pre-flood creatures is from giant animals.
Hornless rhinoceros have been found that are 18 feet tall, 30 feet long. That is a big rhino.
They find fossilized beavers 8 feet long, as big as a modern black bear.
That is a big beaver.
As one guy said, well, if you have bigger trees, you need bigger beavers to chew them down.
God kept everything balanced back in those days too.
Fossilized fish have been found as long as 72 feet, which is almost twice as long as the whale shark, which is the biggest fish in the ocean today.
Those working on the fossil reckon the species may have reached sizes to rival the blue whale.
Sharks used to get enormous. Fossilized shark teeth indicate they were 80 feet long.
Pigs grew to be the size of cattle.
Archaeologists have found the fossil remains of a giant penguin that was almost as big as a man.
The remains of giant water scorpions have been found that are over 8 feet long.
Rodents have been found that were roughly the size of an economy car, and its head alone was larger than a cow. Other rodents similar to guinea pigs grew as big as a modern rhinoceros.
Marsupials were 10 feet long and 6.5 feet tall.
A donkey was excavated in Texas that was 9 feet high at the shoulder.
Kangaroos grew to 11.5 feet.
A huge turtle skeleton is exhibited at the Yale Museum that's 10 feet high.
Horns of a bison measured 8 feet tip to tip. They find deer antlers that measure over 12 feet in width. Camels were over 12 feet tall. Giant fossilized oysters have been found nearly 2 miles above sea level in the Andes Mountains of Peru. They reached a width of 12 feet and weighed up to 650 pounds. The remains of giant geese weighing more than half a ton have been discovered.
Birds nearly 13 feet tall have been found fossilized. That is a big bird. Studies have shown that some of them may have been able to run as fast as 60 miles an hour, comparable to that of a cheetah, and that some species may have kicked their prey kung fu style and could swallow a medium-sized dog in one gulp.
A 25-foot wingspan of Argentavis magnificens is displayed at the Natural History Museum in Los Angeles.
The feather size from such a bird is estimated to have been 5 feet long and over 1/2 feet wide. Ground sloths, which grow to the size of an average monkey today, have been found in the fossil record around 20 feet. Recently, builders found the fossil remains of a giant armadillo in southern Peru that was the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. They were carrying out work inside a private home and stumbled upon this surprise during the digging. They've also recently found in Mexico the remains of a fossilized flying creature with a wingspan in excess of 60 feet. That would be almost the same width as the 64-foot fully extended wingspan of an F-14 Tomcat fighter aircraft. And as for why they grew so big, the scientist said, one of the reasons might be that they just kept on growing, rather than reaching an adult size when growth stops. Lizards have been found up to 23 feet long and weighed over 1,300 pounds.
And as one man points out, this starts to explain the real origins of the dinosaurs. If they did live that long, note this next fact.
A reptile has the potential of growing throughout its life. Unlike other animals, the reptile has no cutoff mechanism whereby it stops growing in size. So, even if reptiles lived only half as long as pre-flood men, we would have to expect gigantic reptiles before the flood.
And of course, we do, as he continues.
Crocodiles or alligators grow at the rate of 20 or so feet per 100 years. If that's the case, there should be giant alligator fossils, right? In 1991, alligator bones were found on the banks of the Amazon River. The skull was almost 5 feet long. Based on this, scientists estimated its height to have been 8 feet tall when walking, and its length was 40 feet, the size of a railroad boxcar. Professor Carl Fraley, from Overland Park, Kansas, said the creature probably weighed around 12 tons, and this would make it about a ton heavier than Tyrannosaurus rex, the mightiest of dinosaur predators. In short, if reptiles today live longer, they would be dinosaurs in a few hundred years.
Do you mean to tell me that we've even been lied to about the real origins of the dinosaurs? Wow. What a shocker. And of course, that's what the final book is dedicated to. How do dinosaurs fit in with the biblical account of creation? But folks, I think the point is obvious. If I didn't know better, I'd say we really do see evidence, plenty of evidence, of how the pre-flood world really could have provided the right conditions to create giant plants, giant people, giant insects, giant animals, and yes, even giant reptiles that we simply call today dinosaurs. How about you? Go figure. Sounds to me like we need to take God seriously when he says he not only judged his creation once, but he's going to do it again. More importantly, I'd say we better get right with him before it's too late. How about you? Are you ready? Are you sure? Or will you likewise perish? Please call out to Jesus Christ today and ask him to forgive you of all your sins before it's too late. Because as we're going to see in this final section, you don't want to go to the other place, let alone forever.